And welcome to House of Comments. I'm Charlotte Henry. And we're going to start the show with an apology and a correction, Miss Emma Bunnell. Hello.
You're right. When you're right, you're right.
Explain to our lovely listeners the absolute libel you cast on me last week, please.
I, and many others, to be fair, despite the fact that I'm a big fan of They Might Be Giants and less so of the Bare Naked Ladies, often get these two bands mixed up. They are quite similar in their output and they both do TV themes.
Sorry, this sounds like a justification to me. This doesn't sound like an apology.
No, and what happened was that you said that They Might Be Giants did the Malcolm in the Middle theme tune. And I said, oh, I think it was the other lot whose name I at that point couldn't remember. I was wrong. You were right. I apologise for impugning your knowledge of 1980s, 90s college rock bands who now do a lot of TV themes.
Apology accepted. Thank you so much. I'm glad that we have that important correction on the record. We have a huge amount to get to, and I was sort of trying to work out which way we should do this. And I guess we have to go slightly backwards because we probably do have to start in Rochdale.
Yes.
And George Galloway's by-election victory there. He's won. He got 12,335 votes, which is a win of over 6,000 more than anyone else standing there.
And interestingly, the second place candidate was an independent.
Yes, that was interesting, I thought. None of the sort of mainstream parties landed a blow in the end in the by-election.
None of the mainstream parties, and not even Reform.
Indeed.
Who, probably on the cusp of being a mainstream party, I guess. It's hard to say.
They were represented by Sam Danchuk, who used to represent the area as an MP, and he got a bit of a walloping in that election. He actually came bottom. He got just 6.3% of the vote.
Clearly, he was a great MP.
yes, people don't seem to have wanted to be rushing to have him back. George Galloway got 39.7% of the vote. The independent you were referencing, David Tully, was the closest with 21.3% of the vote. The Tories actually finished third with 12%. Then Azza Ali, who was nominally the Labour candidate, but sort of not really in the end, for reasons we discussed, was on 7.7%. Just below him on 7% was Ian Donaldson for the Lib Dems. And then on just 6.3% was Simon Danchuk for Reform. I don't quite know what to make of all this because it became in itself a very, it wasn't a one of those by-elections, or perhaps you think it was, that was necessarily representative of the political weather in the country.
Yeah, I think that's absolutely right. I think that there will be, because there always is, and we always need something to talk about in the media, an awful lot of fevered speculation about what does this mean for Keir Starmer? What does this mean for Rishi Sunak? What does this mean for Nigel Farage? Ultimately, I think the answer is not very much. We may well be seeing a by-election in Blackpool South coming up. Mm-hmm. If the three main parties manage to field candidates that they can actually stick behind, then hopefully there we will get more of a, you know, in the way that we did in Kingswood and Wellingborough, more of a kind of, this is where the national trend is. I just think Rochdale's such an aberration with everything that went on. Was it the Greens or the Lib Dems who also disowned their candidate?
I'm not sure. There was a bit of a mess around all of it. I can't see a Green candidate on the list at all. And as I said, the Lib Dem only got 7%.
What was the Lib Dem's name?
That was Ian Donaldson.
Yeah, it's not him. So it was the Green. I think he maybe was disowned before the listings.
Right. My only slight caveat to that this is an aberration, I think it is. Because I think when you have a personality like George Galloway go into a seat, that sort of changes the gravitational field around whatever is happening.
Yes, it does. And I think, I mean, there are going to be consequences of this. That's not the same as whether we can draw conclusions about the national picture from this. And I think indeed, we should separate those two conversations.
Exactly. My only slight caveat to it is it is clear that if the general election was held tomorrow, the war in Gaza and the various parties' various responses would have some bearing on how people voted. I think that's the only broader picture we can take from it.
Yes, I think that's fair.
But I'm not sure how, for how many people that is the it would influence their vote, but clearly there would be some.
There will be some. There are always issues that influence some people's votes, but the fundamentals are the economy, the state of public services, time for a change.
I think that's I think we're entirely in agreement on that. I'm personally looking forward to MPs heckling with cat noises once again in the
Oh.
House of Commons.
Just let them cheer, boo, and honestly, I just when the House of Commons looks like a kindergarten, it annoys the its off me.
It's not great. It is not great. So this is where we are now. It will be interesting to see the influence George Galloway can have in, probably about 5 months in Parliament, something like that. And I assume, having won
Are
this
you
by,
predicting an August election, Charlotte? That's brave.
oh no, sorry, 7 months. Yes, you're right. Sort of, 7 months, quite right, October. And I assume he will also run in the general election. We will see a repeat of this to some degree in a general election.
Yes, and it would be more interesting to see what happens. Because he has frequently come in as a short-term representative MP since he got kicked out of the Labour Party in the early 2000s over things he said around the Iraq War. I mean, the thing with Galloway, like, there are lots and lots of people who, for example, myself, agreed with his position on Iraq, but found the way that he prosecuted that case utterly vile. So I was against the war in Iraq, but I was not in favour of Saddam Hussein. I did not think that I was
I was
never
going to say,
applauding his indefatigability, if you see what I
your
mean.
politics is rather different.
Exactly. And again, there are plenty of people with absolutely valid concerns about what's happening in Gaza, from both sides of that war, and their British perspectives on that war. Who would find Galloway utterly abhorrent? So it will be interesting to see in the heat of a general election with candidates that don't implode, hopefully, whether he can hang on in Rochdale, whether he does hang on in Rochdale, whether he goes off somewhere else. I mean, he's a absolute carpetbagger.
Yeah, I would assume he will try and build up over the next few months
I
and
would have
try
thought
and say,
so.
I'm just having horrible reflections of how nasty the campaign got with Una King.
Yeah, and even worse with I would say with Kim Leadbeater.
I don't remember. Yes, I know who the campaign you're reflecting on. The one that sticks out for me was the Una King one, but yes.
No, the campaign in Batley and Spen was vile. And thankfully he was beaten, but not by enormous amounts. But he's not a very good MP. He's quite a good politician.
He's a very impressive public
He's an
speaker.
impressive orator. He's a good rabble rouser. He's made a national profile for himself in all of those ways. But he had an appalling attendance record, both the times that he's been elected for various fringe parties. And he doesn't do the bread and butter bits. And I mean, this is the thing that breaks my heart for the people of Rochdale, because Rochdale is not a place that's in the best of states by all accounts. Not a place I know well. I'm not going to claim to suddenly be some huge expert on Rochdale, but it is a struggling place, and it needs and I think if you look at what the second place candidate was campaigning on, a lot of it was about local broken
Yes, well,
infrastructure.
he apparently is a very well-known local businessman. I think he
Yeah.
runs a garage and is quite well regarded in the community and is well known in the community.
So I think that there is, but I just don't see Galloway doing anything on the issues that matter on the ground in Rochdale, rather than simply using this as a platform to stoke division around the war in Gaza.
Well, we will have to see. It's undoubtedly, given the size of the victory, impressive victory. It will have ripple effects beyond Rochdale. There's no doubt about that. Just to finish this off, do you think it puts pressure on Keir Starmer? Do you think most people in the Labour Party will just be like, this is an aberration, we can move on?
I mean, what do you mean by pressure? Keir Starmer was already under pressure over Gaza. That's what we saw with the whole thing with the SNP last week.
Indeed.
So I don't think it. I don't think it changes that dynamic particularly.
Does it exacerbate it?
I'm not sure you could exacerbate it, if I'm honest. I think that
Fair
pressure
enough.
Already exists, and it is as hard as it could possibly be.
I mean, the line coming out of the Labour Party seems to be, we screwed up our candidate. We're really sorry. We're going to sort it out for the general election.
Yeah, which I think is, I mean, all they can say, really, because that's exactly what happened. And at least they're not kind of going, oh, yeah, we didn't mess up, because they clearly did. And they messed up very publicly and badly.
Yeah, I think that's probably right. It'll be interesting to see how it plays out. But yeah, I think probably I agree with your assessment. We need to jump over to the Conservatives, because it's been a deeply, deeply unpleasant week in the Conservatives, because the ugly spectre of Islamophobia in that party has, sadly, you and I predicted just a couple of weeks ago, has reared its ugly head again. Lee Anderson, who was the deputy chairman of the party, he resigned over the Rwanda stuff from that role. He's now lost the whip after he said Islamists have got control of Sadiq Khan, the mayor of London. I have to say, I think Sadiq Khan is not a very good mayor of London, but I have loathed the way every debate about him and every criticism of him from lots of the bits of the Conservative Party have always been a wink, wink, nudge, nudge about his ethnicity and faith. We saw this right from the start, and this wasn't even a wink, wink, nudge, nudge with Zach Goldsmith.
Yeah.
That was the most revolting campaign.
Incredibly racist campaign.
It was revolting, and it completely backfired, thankfully, because people in London were having none of it. We saw some pretty unpleasant comments from Susan Hall.
Who's a nutter.
And now we've seen this from Lee Anderson, and it's just not okay.
And here's my question, right? What is it about the mayor of a city that is a couple of hundred miles away from Lee Anderson's constituency that makes him constantly attacking him? What difference does who the mayor of London is make to the people of Ashfield?
Well, you're right. It's not really for the MP for Ashfield to be commenting on the mayor of London. He obviously did it in his guise on television on GB News, but whatever.
But, you know, why isn't he attacking Andy Burnham or Andy Street in the same way? Oh, I wonder what the difference is.
I want to call it a dog whistle, but it's not even
that
subtle.
No, it's not a dog whistle.
It's not even that subtle.
We can all hear it.
Right, exactly. I would also say I've had real issues living in London with the way these pro-Palestine, these pro-Palestine protests have gone. I think there are real questions to ask of the Metropolitan Police of some of those people attending those protests. But we've seen really vile anti-Semitic slogans happening at those protests. But it's not Sadiq Khan encouraging that.
No, and he's not in charge of operational policing.
Correct, absolutely right.
It's got nothing to do with him. The operational policing is done by the mayor independently, as it should be. Look, I don't like a lot of the placards on those demos. I do think it's worth always saying that not everybody on those demonstrations agrees with the wordings of those placards.
Quite
There's
so, but have
perfectly
you?
valid case to be made that people can demonstrate against what's happening in
Of
Gaza.
course, there is. People can protest. We all have the right to protest. But I don't want to get diverted with this because I really want to focus on the key issue. But I would say if I went to a protest one week and I saw people organizing that protest were waving around racist slogans, I'm not sure I would attend the next week.
Well, I mean, is it the people organising the protests or is it the people who go on the protests? There's a different matter because you can't stop people going on the protests who are also idiots. And I think, yeah, there are. I mean, I think the projection onto the House of Parliament during the vote was a huge error.
Well, it wasn't a huge error, it was anti-Semitic.
But yeah, but what I mean is, if in terms of what you're saying about making those marches as pluralistic as possible, then projecting a phrase that is known to be seen as anti-Semitic, from the river to the sea, Palestine will be free, essentially means that Israel would not exist. And
Correct.
if you are, as most people, who would be marching against the people in Gaza are in favor of a two-state solution, that does not mean that Israel would not exist.
I like the generosity of your spirit.
I'm sorry, Charlotte. Most people are just like, this is horrendous. I feel like I want to do something. I'm going to go out on a Saturday afternoon and make my voice heard. And I absolutely get that. I haven't been on any of the demonstrations for all of the qualms that you're raising, but I don't. I've made a real effort not to judge people on either side for their passion on this because I mean, I hate both sides saying anything, but I genuinely understand the passion on both sides. And so it's been just, it's horrendous. And so much of the dialogue is so simplistic. And I just am so, what worries me, I mean, there's so many things worries me. I'm worried about the appalling situation on the ground in Gaza. I'm worried that if Israel did stop, that Hamas would be emboldened. But I worry mostly in terms of UK politics about the poison that is being injected into political life as a result of people being overly simplistic and black and white on this very, very complicated international situation.
Well said. Let's go back to the key issue at hand because I don't want people to think we're bouncing around away from it. As I say, I thought, well, you and I both made our views on what Lee Anderson said unequivocally clear. There's also the thing of Lee Anderson saying he's sort of getting support from different elements of the party and getting, support from backbenchers
Well, we've
saying.
all seen the WhatsApp messages. Lee should come back. Lee's a hero. You know, these are not randomers. These are MPs, Tory MPs.
Indeed. I think it's a really the one thing I don't agree with the criticism of, and I say this in the same way I didn't agree with the criticism of Keir Starmer on this. I don't the about the speed of the action. I think I think Rishi Sunak did act about as quickly as was reasonable to work through the issues. You can always say, oh, he could have done it instantly and people said the same thing about recent incidents in the Labour Party, but I'm just not sure you can snap your fingers in that way.
I think process matters, and you do have to go through process, however frustrating that is. I agree with you on that, and I think that's something that has been largely lost. It should not be within the remit of any party leader to withdraw the whip willy-nilly.
Quite
There
so.
has to be a process.
Well, and we saw it's a totally different set of issues, but we saw how dangerous it can be when the party leader can wipe out a bunch of the whip from a bunch of his MPs under Boris Johnson.
Yeah, exactly. And if we felt that that was appalling, then we have to say, well, it was appalling because the process wasn't followed properly. And therefore, we need to be in whatever we feel about the people on the sharp end of the process should be supported.
So exactly. So I didn't really agree with the attacks on Sunak, that it should have been quicker. It should have been like he worked through it fairly quickly.
Yeah, I don't think the speed of the Sunak's response is the problem.
No,
I
quite.
think the wider problem in the Tory party is the problem.
Yeah, and there were lots of Tory MPs who were slightly reticent, I would say, in their condemnations.
Oh God, I mean it was wrong. Why was it wrong? It was wrong. Why was it wrong? It was wrong. Tell me why it was wrong. Explain, and they can't because they know too many of their party members and voters agree with Lee Anderson. Lee Anderson is a grassroots Tory favourite, and that's what
Yes.
terrifies them.
It is fascinating the role he's kind of carved out for himself, isn't it?
Yeah, because there is, just as we've seen with the Republicans in America, an element of the right that is growing in strength and in prominence within their parties that is just simply nihilistic.
We've also had the former Home
And
Sec.
sorry, I just on that, we should probably mention the former Prime Minister.
We did. Yes, Liz Truss at CPAC. I assume you're referring to.
Yes, exactly.
Well, we
Who?
had a little bit of a laugh about that the other week. I just want to keep on this because we've also got Suella Braverman, the former Home Secretary, basically saying that this was. It was hysteria, I think, is the word she used, this row over conservative Islamophobia. And I personally, I'm not inclined to dismiss it so readily. I think we can have a serious question about radicalization and Islamism in this and issues around that in this country. I think we can have a serious conversation about that. But I think, again, I go back to the real thing we're talking about. We're talking about an MP saying that a Muslim mayor of a multicultural city, a multi-ethnicity city, had been taken over by Islamist extremists. That's what we're talking about. That is
Yeah,
not
and it's
acceptable.
absolute constant conflation with
Right.
Muslim and Islamism and Islamist extremists. And that is so vile. I mean, I think about my area, the people I know, my neighbours, my friends, my Slimming World mummy, all of whom are Londoners, Muslims, none of whom are, radicalised, about to blow anything up. And it's just so vile to just tar everybody of that faith with their most extreme elements. It's like saying that everybody who goes to church is essentially like the Westboro Baptists.
I've just got this Suella Braverman Telegraph piece up. But she has a Jewish husband, doesn't she? Am I remembering
I
that
believe
correctly?
so, yeah.
Yeah. But I'm only saying it just because her piece begins with they started with the Jews. And I'm deeply uncomfortable with politicians playing communities off against each other.
Yeah.
There are, for reasons we don't need to explain because it's obvious, there are serious communal upsets and tensions at the moment in the UK. And MPs, particularly senior MPs, particularly someone who has run the Home Office, should be doing their utmost to de-escalate them, not escalate them.
Yes, exactly. If you are a responsible lawmaker, you do not inflame community tensions. And
No.
it used to be that the person, and it was a singular MP who was famous for doing that, became an absolute pariah. Enoch Powell blew up his own political career by inflaming racial tensions. And now it is seen as a valid route to potentially running for the leadership of the Conservative Party. And that is terrifying because they could win.
But
I mean, I don't think they're going to win this time, but I'm not sure they're going to get their house in order before they win again.
and I'm not even saying we shouldn't discuss serious issues. I'm not saying we have to pretend there are no problems, with radicalization and extremism, with whatever, I'm not saying that. I'm just saying that MPs, first of all, senior conservatives should not slur. Let's be honest. As I say, I don't think Sadiq Khan's a very good mayor of London, but he's hardly a political extremist, is he?
I mean, I think he's an okay mayor of London. I'd like him to have done more. I'd like him, but I
Sure, but
think,
my point, he's hardly an extreme
but he's not.
outlier
Yeah,
politician, is
he's
he?
not an extremist. He's a perfectly normal mainstream politician.
Centre-left politician.
Yeah, exactly. And the constant, and his security detail has to be really hardcore. That's what he has to live with day in, day out, because there are real and valid threats to his life. I saw him speak at the Fabian Society conference this year, and I, watched his security detail arrive with him. That's not how we should be as a society.
No. Of course, you just reminded me that actually a lot of the issue that Sir Lindsay Hoyle was talking about when that whole saga from the other week came up, he was talking about threats to politicians again.
Well, yeah, and I to bringing this back to Galloway, I worry that his rhetoric in Parliament is going to inflame rather than dampen that down.
I just find I would like both these parties to get. I'm not doing the both sides of the thing because we talked about anti-Semitism the other week. This week, the live issue is conservative and Islamophobia. We have to be condemnatory of it, and we are condemnatory of it because it's appalling.
Yeah, and I think there is a decent argument to be made that it is as endemic as the anti-Semitism in the Labour Party got under Corbyn and is not being dealt with in the same way. And I think it must be.
My point was going to be both these parties. You've got to get your house in order. We cannot have, because again, it goes back to, it plays two communities off against each other.
Yeah, exactly. Who are not in opposition. There are international disputes between a Muslim population and a Jewish population, neither of which live in Britain, who these communities have lived alongside each other. I mean, I grew up in Stamford Hill, where I lived, neighbour on my left, Muslim family, neighbour on my right, Orthodox Jewish family. Everyone just mucked along together.
I just want to make my final point on this before we move on, because there's a bunch of other stuff. Again, for all my criticisms of Sadiq Khan, he has made very legitimate attempts, particularly in the anti-Semitism crisis in the Labour Party, to reach out to the Jewish community. He has tried to do cross-communal things. So, I mean, it just makes
Yeah, I mean,
the.
Suella Braverman trying to claim Martin Niemöller is just disgusting, frankly.
My point is that the way Sadiq Khan has behaved as Mayor of London in his cross-communal attempts makes the Lee Anderson comments all the more, I'm going to say it, despicable, because it doesn't reflect how he has behaved as a mayor in across communities.
No, absolutely. And again, it's just saying that any Muslim in public life, nudge, nudge, wink, wink, they're probably captured by the Islamist extremists. And that's just a disgrace.
We've got a few other things to wrap up, really. We could do a whole show on this, but the Home Office is a shambles.
You did tell me something we don't know, right?
Okay,
But
right. Thank
yes.
you. We'll see you all next week. Lovely. No, we've had a data dump from the Home Office. They put 13 reports out on Thursday, just a whole one go on it, which is the like crisis comms 101. It's so unsubtle.
And it's all basically, they probably wouldn't have released them at all. They certainly weren't planning to, which is why when their previous head, is it Martin Neil?
Yes. David Neil, sorry.
David Neil, sorry, was sacked for leaking some of it to the Daily Mail. Now, to be fair, leaking stuff to the press is probably a Zachary Moore offence as a public servant, but he should have whistleblower protections, frankly. And they've had to get it out because it was already out there. But some of the details in these reports, basically, our border security is a shambles. Our asylum accommodation is a shambles, is cruel, is, you know, it both doesn't work very well. And when it's working, what it's working to do is be as vile as possible.
Yeah, I want to just pick up on that because there's one story. We don't have quite enough time to go through all 13 reports, but there's one story that really caught my eye and really upset me.
Yeah, I know exactly the one you mean.
Know which one I'm going to say. It was reported in The Guardian. The headline is Child Asylum Seekers in UK Made to Play Game About Who Gets Foster Care Places. So these poor children that have ended up here in the asylum system might be getting fostered. Basically, they're in these hotels that we've heard about. There's stories of them all being gathered together as one has been given a foster home and sort of playing a guessing game of who gets to go to a foster home.
It's just so cruel. And
I mean, the cruelty.
If you
is...
want, you know, these children are likely to remain British citizens, right? Or to become British citizens. They're likely to get, you know, statistically, are likely to achieve. Leave to remain, right? Do you want a bunch of massively traumatized children, given that the government has completely abandoned any pretense at having anything like CAMHS and mental health services for children? Or do you want to try to have these children be as healthy and robust human beings who will be living in our country for quite some time as possible? And it just seems like the Home Office's approach of cruelty, their entire approach is try to put people off from coming here by being as cruel as possible. A, hasn't worked. People aren't being put off coming because actually the cruelty they're fleeing is even worse. But also then, of course, is storing up huge problems for the future.
Yeah. I'm thinking also that Robert Jenrick thing about painting over the mural.
Yeah, absolutely. The cruelty's the point.
Yeah. Talking of shambles, we don't really have time to jump into the blockbuster post office hearing this week. That's just is escalating my belief. We will come back to it.
I'm just looking forward to the ITV sequel, which might actually mention Adam Crozier at some point, who went from running the post office to running ITV.
Send your lawyer's letters to Emma.
Just saying, it could be mentioned, isn't it?
Where can people find you and send their lawyer's letters, Emma?
My newsletter is Hard Thinking on the Soft Left on Substack, and I'm on all the social medias as Emma Burnell _.
You can find me at theaddition.net. And I'm at Charlotte A. Henry across social media. Please head over to patreon.com/House of Commons podcast and support this show. We're heading into a general election. There's going to be a lot of work we put into the show. And we could really do with your support to keep it going. It costs just £5 a month. And we are about to launch sending some extra audio out for our lovely paid subscribers as well. So we would really appreciate that support as we battle against the big beasts from all the other podcast companies. And also, if you don't feel able to do that, please share the podcast, please like it where you listen to the podcast. All that support means an awful lot to us, and we'll see you next week.